For May the 8th, 2020, we talk about XCOM Chimera Squad, the Final Fantasy VII remake, and we ask you about your most ridiculous or useless pieces of gaming hardware. Welcome to Level 328. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. David, I need to apologize to you, and I also need to apologize to Jella. Something about the way we record, and possibly about your microphone or your internet, has made it so that the program that records us occasionally just pitch shifts both of your voices down lower.
Nice.
So it happened once on your track, David, a few weeks ago, and I was able to fix it. However, last episode, it happened for both you and Jala. Like the file that I got back from the service that I use just kind of had that built in, and the backup track that I record had a bunch of clicks in it. So it was all staticky. So I couldn't fix it. So yeah, last episode had you guys, I think in the opening, I assured everybody that you were not going through ultra puberty, but so I wanted to open up with an apology. Occasionally all of your words down like this, and then can kind of came back up. So
apology, I feel left out. I demand to sound like James Earl Jones.
Oh, so yeah, that's my story. Basically everything, like the novelty is worn off of this. Like I am simultaneously just kind of done with staying in, but also like I'm actually kind of terrified at the idea of things opening up. Like the idea of things going back to normal depresses me now. So I've got to work through that.
Wait. I thought pretty much nothing has changed for you.
I don't know. Definitely among the four of us, or the five of us rather, things have changed probably the least for me. Because like even though Jala works from home a lot, she still had to, she still went into the office sometimes. But like even still, there's just a certain amount of existential overhead. So it's not like bummed out that like, oh, the Blizzard's ending and we're going to have to go back and make up a bunch of ground at school. It's more, okay, I'm not going to try and rationalize my weird anxiety and depression, but that's about where we're at. I think that maybe there's like a certain amount of acclimation that's happened to the existential overhead or what, but yeah, that's where I am.
Yeah. I don't think it affects like any one person more than the other, but based on how often they go outside, like everyone's equally can't go outside right now.
So. Right. Yeah. And everyone is still, I mean, like that, I was talking with some family about this, and I was like, yeah, you remember, like, you know, when your power goes out and then you walk into a room and you still just by reflex turn on a light switch.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That happened. Okay. Good. I'm happy some of you said yep and didn't just leave me twisting. That would have been. Get him. No, but it's like that, except, you know, for me, it's like, oh, yeah, I'll go down to the bookstore and like browse around and stuff. Nope. Can't do it. Store's not open. Yeah. Yeah, it's just a bunch of just like even still 6 or so weeks in, the thought in my head is like, yeah, I could go run to a place, like even I'm sorry, I'm bloviating at this point. I will hand the floor over at one point, but like even though I do work from home, I do like solitude and all of that. I still every day gave myself a reason to leave the house, like to go get something or run an errand or go see family or whatever. Like, and now I can't really do that. I gave myself reasons to leave the house.
Yes.
Why did you have hope before, Cole? What's that about?
Oh man. Dennis, you were not here last time, so I'll throw to you. What's going on?
Same old stuff. You were making me think of Simon Sinek said something. He was talking to his company about where they go from here. And he's the noted the Golden Circle thinker. He's like a whatever, marketing dude.
Yeah.
But he talked about the importance of, like, from here, our focus needs to be on, you know, what do we become rather than reclaiming what we've been.
Yeah.
And I found that helpful, at least in my thinking about what life looks like. Well, on a personal level, like at a family level, and then also just on a societal level, is like, all right, the idea of reclaiming a normal is kind of dead. And there's grieving and sadness that happens with that. But mm-hmm. like my focus, where I hope we can get people's focus to, is like, how do we make whatever we get to next better than what we had?
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, normal is not coming back. And even once coronavirus is gone, I think the normal that we knew is long gone. That doesn't have to be a bad thing.
Yeah. We can make it better. I don't have a lot of hope that we will, but we can.
Oh no.
I know. I didn't mean to take the, to take the air out of it. Oh yeah. No, I was such a bummer that I knocked Dennis offline.
Yeah. And we couldn't ward off pessimism in the intro of the show.
Nope.
I heard, I don't have.
Oh, wait, one moment. I completely forgot to even start recording. Here.
Oh, hello.
No, it's fine. I got it all. People are going to hear what happens when we turn on the recorder. Okay, here we go.
You see what we have to deal with?
Do you see what we have to deal with when Cole forgets everything? But what have you been up to besides trying to pierce the murky veil? Yeah,
trying to stay positive. I've done backyard camping is the next great adventure with my kiddos. Mm-hmm. So we did it on Saturday night, which was great for like 80% of the night, and the last 20% decided to pour rain. So we had a little 5 a.m. scramble inside.
That's part of camping.
Yeah. It's part of camping. Yeah, it was the real deal experience, and they were pretty happy about it. You know, you always pay for something like that in just them being wiped out and crabby as hell the next night. But still worth.
Yeah.
I'm talking about me and Jen as well as the kids.
Yeah. Well, because you slept on the ground outside when your bed was less than 100 feet away.
Yeah. You do dumb things when you're in quarantine.
Yeah, you know. and for your kids.
Yeah. It's so funny, though. There was the moment of panic where, like, you know, they were so excited, like, oh, this is the best thing ever for, you know, for the entire night and, you know, hanging out outside. And then, like, 5 minutes before everyone settled down, I was like, wait, I want to go inside.
Like, Why was he freaking out?
He just decided he wanted to go inside. And so I was like, I'll go get you a blankie from inside. And he's like, yeah, okay. And brought him something from inside out, and that calmed it. But
gotcha.
And he was way cooler about coming inside in the rain than he was about the whole blankie thing. So
nice.
It was fun. The random things that you learn, the quirks.
No.
Did you guys just do sleeping bags on the ground, or did you have any air mattresses? Or
So we have like the air mattress that ate Manhattan. It is a queen size air mattress where literally it's think like a suitcase with rollers. Like it's a big luggage bag,
uh-huh.
But it is still the size of maybe a small trunk, we'll say. Roll that sucker out. You plug it in. We have a couple extensions cords leading out to the tent, which is a great part of backyard camping. Right. And literally you flip a switch and this thing unfolds transformer like as it inflates, and it's got like supports and a box under it and everything. And so that's what we slept on, which I think it was actually a conversation in the parenting channel of Slack, which is The Kids Are All Right, if anyone wants to join that. That, you know, your sleeping implements early on in camping determines so much of your impression of it. Mm-hmm. Someone was like, oh yeah, we just did literally like sleeping bag in the ground and I hate camping.
Oh, that's not even like, that's like not even safe. I know what to say about that. Like,
hashtag bad for you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how I camped when I was a kid.
Yeah.
How do you feel about camping now?
I like it. Yeah. But
seated.
I don't know. I came around. I am like by myself now. I have like an air mattress and do glamping more than camping. But
no, when I was a kid, when we did backyard camping, you know, did the exact same thing. Pitch the tent under the tree and sleep basically just on exposed roots.
Yeah. I would be sure my back is fucked up.
Yeah,
See, I wasn't thinking that. I was thinking more of the temperature. Like, you want something to keep the earth from sucking all the heat out of your body.
Yeah, so I survived, and I have been camping since then. I haven't not for a little while, but like in high school and college, we used to go. Used to go camping.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh no. We used to go camping because we thought that state parks would have fewer people trying to catch us drinking, which was a dumb idea. But
that's that has the sheriff who considers it his calling.
Mm-hmm. Swinging by old Pleasant Hill trying to bust up campsites.
Yeah, we've become firm proponents of cabining. If we're going to go to a state park, if that's available to you, feasible for you, it's a good way to go.
Yeah. Also, that costs a lot of money. Campsites like $12 a piece.
Yep.
See, I just want America to adopt right to roam or whatever from Europe.
Britain. Wait, yeah. Is that Britain? Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah.
What is that?
Go on. You have a better definition than I do. Shoot, so you should say.
So it's basically any undeveloped land you more or less have a right to pass through and or camp on as long as you're not damaging it.
So that one guy that was like camping on Paradise Island of Disneyland or whatever it was, they caught him.
Yeah. If that were in Britain, then yeah, that would be fair game.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. It's also relevant to, like, for example, you can't keep people from like going to the beach.
Yeah,
that.
Mm.
I think it's an Easter egg too. The law got passed because somebody was walking through like Madonna's like acreage or something. I don't know if this is apocryphal or not, but
no, because it's like the law originates from like several hundred years ago.
Okay, yeah. Maybe it was challenged under that or something. I need to get my facts straight.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Backyard camping is fun. David, how about you?
Not too much going on. I finally finished Uzumaki, so that was good stuff.
Oh, sweet. What'd you think of the back half of it?
Overall, I like the back half of it. I'm kind of about the actual ending.
Everybody but me is about the actual ending.
it doesn't really resolve anything.
I'm fine with that.
Welcome to life, sucker.
I mean, it is so. First off, Junji Ito does not know how to end anything, and also with how Lovecraft inspired it is, if it had a good ending, it would actually be very. It would not be a good. It would not be faithful to its inspirations.
See, but I feel like there's a difference between that and just not having an ending, which is effectively what it is.
Oh, I mean, I would say it has an ending, but I don't know that we can get into details without spoiling it.
Yes. So. Well, I think it's a... So this is something that I really like reading. I'm a big fan of like the SCP, fiction online.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's, you know, kind of a big element of those is the kind of the idea that, you know, you aren't supposed to explain things, but that's not exactly the same as like not having any, I don't know if you'd say closure or like you have to have some sort of kind of indication of what it, you know, I guess it's kind of the most effective way to end something like that is to basically give the person enough information that they can kind of figure out what's going on, but not enough that they can completely figure out what's going on, if that makes sense. Or and yeah, I feel like the it was strongly within the category of just not even like, you know, there being nothing, no indication of stuff going on.
The closest you can ever get on something like that is being able to say, it wasn't effective for me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, overall, you know, really enjoyed it. You know, it felt like, you know, definitely, even though I'd say the ending didn't have much payoff, I feel like the stories kind of leading up to that had pretty good payoff. Also, I completely forget the characters' names, but the main character's boyfriend is just continues to be, you know, a hilarious, just really well written character to the degree that he's, by which I mean to the most part, he's not written.
Yeah. He exists just like to say things exactly as they are happening, and everybody else gets to be blasé around him and ignore him until it's too late. Yeah.
I just feel like there's I'll have to figure out if there's some way. I'm reading it on Kindle, so if there's some way to like screen grab or something, there's a I don't know what you call it, a comic cell or whatever that I think is just my favorite from any comic I've ever read, where it's just, you know, there's one scene where it's kind of, you know, in between, you know, episodes of craziness, and they're, you know, having a date on the beach, and he's just like sitting there and like clearly has not slept in like weeks, and you know, has not shaved or, you know, any of that, and it's like has the 1,000-yard stare, and she's like got her head on his shoulder, like, you know, enjoying the romantic moment. It's like I just love the capturing the two characters in one shot.
Yeah, Shuichi and Kirie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, cool. I'm going to definitely look into some of his other stuff. I kind of want to read just for being just kind of, I don't know, non sequitur or whatever. He has published a whole bunch of horror manga, and then one manga about owning cats.
Yeah. No, his cat diary, Yan and Moo. It's great. It's one of my favorite comics, actually. It's super good. Oh, okay. I read that even before I got Greta. No, it's like his illustration style works really well with it. And it's super heartwarming, the way that he comes around to liking his wife's cats. It's great. Nice. There's lots of like little like slice of life, like trivia stuff, because it's just literally about him, about him and his wife and their cats. So I can't recommend it enough.
Apropos of nothing, David, you made me think, I was reading Walking Your Octopus to Milo and Luke other day. Yeah. They brought it out of whatever room it was in. And we browsed through. So on Advice for Pets comics.
Nice. So this is, I don't know, semi-related, but I don't know if you know, are there any, I don't know, wait, I guess kind of top scholarly works on like Japanese horror? Because the one thing I feel like in reading this is, I guess, I feel like I've been exposed to enough of it to be able to tell that there's definitely, you know, kind of motifs and, you know, conventions and stuff like that. But not necessarily enough to be able to really understand and pick up on them.
I don't know of anything like that. The closest I've ever come is just, you know, a couple of books about like different yokai, which I got specifically for like, you know, interest, because I love bestiaries, you know, and reference books, reference books like that. And those have enough folklore that, you know, certain Japanese, you know, horror works kind of draw from or assume that people will know, but it is nowhere near as focused as what you might be asking for.
Yeah, if there was a place where TV tropes would shine and give surprising amounts of insight, my bet would be on that subject.
Yeah, that's probably that would be a good place to start, actually.
Yeah, because what really got me thinking about it is, you know, playing World of Darkness, I guess a bunch of the, I don't know what you'd call them, acts, so I guess they call them mysteries. A bunch of the mysteries, I guess, are direct translations of, like, Japanese urban legends.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Yep. And so, like, I guess my understanding is a couple of them are like much easier to solve if you actually know the legend they're referencing.
Yeah. No, I would like to see just a straight presentation of those as well.
Yeah.
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 Very cool. Nice. Ben, how about you?
I'll try and make a semi-segue. I heard about a Lovecraft-inspired thing that's coming out on HBO called Lovecraft Country, which is apparently based on a book. That looks sweet. I don't know. Outside of the horror trope of having a remade song to sound creepy, it looked really original and good.
What song did they adapt for it or
it's
cover?
Like a old like pop song where they say like 1, 2, 3, 4, and that's what they slow down and try and make creepy.
Oh yeah, it's like from an Apple commercial or something. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a what is it?
Not that one. It's an older one. It's like from the 50s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a Jordan Peele is doing that, right?
This production company. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I've heard very good things about that book. I know Gary read it at some point in the past. I'm excited about that.
Is Peele the one who did the Twilight Zone as well?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Get Out.
I need to check that out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's good.
That's everything. He's directed or produced.
He's a nut, kind of a similar thing. I mean, he's someone that I'd be interested to read some sort of I don't know, like biography or something of like where did he come from in terms of like until recently I knew him as the dude that made like funny you know sketch comedy stuff and all of a sudden he's making like
he did super He did plenty of interviews for Get Out when it came out that you can look into where he talks about making the movie.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll have to track that down.
Yeah. He's just super, super talented director who happens to like scary things.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, but I mean, other than that, do you have anything going on, Ben? Or is it just the indoor life?
It's coronavirus season. So there's very little to talk about. So
yeah.
It's weird because I mean, there's like not as many movies coming out or anything, or if they do, nobody sees them, you know. No. And so it's like, and like sports aren't around, which isn't really much a factor for me, but it's a factor for other people. So it's like all you got to go on is like TV or video games, kind of, you know. And it's just like it's weird the shift in talking about media. I guess that said, I did finish watching Midnight Gospel last week, and that is like. I like it a lot. So like thumbs up. Animation style's amazing. The interviews are hit or miss maybe with the episode, but it ends very strongly in the 8th episode. So
nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. That's the Penn Ward Adventure Time one you mentioned last time.
Yeah. Pendleton Ward does the animation for it. And I didn't know this until after I watched it, but they basically take clips from a podcast that I forget his name. It's a comedian. I forget his name, but he's a comedian who kind of does a bunch of like, hallucinogen type drugs and talks about his experiences.
Okay.
It's a nice pairing for the show. So
Let me I recognize the name Phil Hendry, but that is all I know that he's. I know he's like a voice actor. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nice. Well, that's some banter. I think that I'm ready to get into the actual show here. Not that this isn't part of the show. And we're going to have a usual kind of show for you. We've got the grind, we've got the multiplayer, and we've got the end boss. And why don't we get started with
the grind?
The grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Dennis, since you were away last time, I will throw to you.
Yeah, and I've got a huge one to talk about, at least huge for me.
Okay.
In context of the series, it's kind of a little side thingus, but we'll get to that. I have been playing XCOM Chimera Squad.
Oh dang, yeah.
Which is like the pseudo sequel, pseudo next game. I mean, it is the next game in the XCOM franchise. It's not like a full sequel. It's like it is the blood dragon to XCOM 2's Far Cry.
Yeah.
If I may. And my God, guys, down is up, up is down. I don't know what the hell is going on. I think I like it, but I just, it is the best way I can figure out how to put it. And I people agree. I posted this to Reddit, and that's, I think, right now my best upvoted post. So mm-hmm. that's nice. But
don't know how to interpret that.
So I think close to 3,000 upvotes. So that's nice.
Okay.
I don't know why I said that. Anyway, the analogy I would make is, imagine you came home one day and someone had completely rearranged your bedroom.
Okay.
And nothing's where you expected. Everything feels kind of off and you feel kind of violated. But at the same time, some of the changes are kind of creative and nice. Like yeah. that is XCOM Chimera Squad.
So, I mean, like, so you had been following the series basically, you know, from XCOM Enemy Unknown. You loved XCOM 2. I remember you having really mm-hmm. huge things to say, really, really, really great things to say about War of the Chosen specifically.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you've got more invested in this, I think, than anybody here.
I went back and looked. I think I have upwards of 600 hours across games in the series. It gets yeah. a little dicey because I played a significant amount of the first one on PS3.
Right. So I wasn't keeping track of hours. Yeah.
Yeah. But that is, I mean, easily, XCOM 2 is easily my favorite game of all time and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I recently went back to that, actually, almost in preparation for Chimera Squad.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so Chimera Squad, the biggest change, the most obvious change, is that rather than turn order taking place as your entire squad goes, then their entire squad goes, it is now on a one-on-one basis. So one of your characters goes, and then in all likelihood, one of their characters goes.
So it's not tied specifically to like an initiative kind of thing or like a speed stat?
That would be, no, it's not tied to a stat, but at the beginning of every encounter, you do a breach, which is basically a free turn for you. And you choose the order that your agents move in that turn.
Okay.
And then that sets their order in the initiative for the rest of the round. Yeah. And so probably the easiest way to say is now it acts like normal initiative
okay.
for, you know, most reference points that people would have rather than the kind of XCOM that I know
mm-hmm.
of the entirety of one turn goes or one side goes and then the other.
So it's not like Final Fantasy Tactics where like you have a knight and you have a thief and the knight has a speed, you know, has like an initiative of, you know, a 50. And the mm-hmm. and the thief has one of 25, and so basically it counts down every tick, and then the AP is, you know, there for the thief twice as much as it is for the knight. Okay.
Right. No, yeah. it's basically at the beginning of each encounter, you set 1, 2, 3, 4. Here's the order I want you going through the gotcha. Door. And then for the rest of the round, unless you use abilities to change it, that's the order that when your turn pops up, that's the agent that will be available.
Gotcha. 5, 6, 7, 8. You do not deviate from
that. Oh, dude, they have deviated. Because like I said, that's the most apparent change. The second biggest is the breaching that I just mentioned, where you kind of kick things off with a bang, sometimes literally going through a wall if you have a breaching charge, and there will be multiple entrance points, and based on the entrance point there might be benefits or downsides. So one entrance point might have low visibility, so your agents are harder to hit as they're going through.
Yeah.
Or another entrance point might be, you know, heavily surveyed, where there's likely to be more enemies around that area, and you get one turn where each of your agents goes in a row to take out as many people as you can in the room. And you'll be able to see if, you know, you breach in and enemies will be either surprised, alert, or aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to prioritize your targets, one, on just how powerful and dangerous the enemy is overall, but then also whether they are aggressive or alert or surprised. Because if they get kind of a breach turn as well if they're alert or aggressive. If they're alert, they'll kind of run for cover or buff or you know, do something like that. If they're aggressive, they're going to attack.
Mm-hmm.
And so there might be smaller enemies that normally you would ignore on the breach, but because they're aggressive, you kind of are obligated to take them out or eat the damage.
Yeah.
That is the third thing that is very, very different about the game. Like, it just, everything is very, very different, and I don't know what to think of it, but it's kind of fun. In XCOM and XCOM 2, you might as well not have health on your soldiers. Because taking damage in a mission is kind of a either a death sentence or an irrelevance sentence. Your soldier will be out for a pretty punishing number of days. They'll have to miss several missions. And by the time they're available again, they're probably behind on the XP curve and just like underpowered versus what you need. And so the entire focus as you're kind of strategizing in XCOM and XCOM 2 is like, I need to not take damage in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause while my soldier might not die, it's going to effectively take them out of the picture.
Mm-hmm.
In Chimera Squad, as long as you do not completely get knocked out, you will be perfectly fine for the next mission. And so suddenly you're using health like a resource like you would in other games in a way that you haven't in the past entries in the series.
Okay.
Man, where to go from there? XCOM is famous for like your soldiers. These soldiers are these randomly generated peons that you're going to lose a lot of. Now each is a bespoke character that has a personality and they've got banter back and forth with each other, versus having a save the world, fight back against an alien invasion aesthetic. You are a police force in a city that is like the first city after the alien invasion is over, where the leftover aliens and humans and hybrids are living together.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Alien 90210.
Okay.
And it's got that level of campiness that I made the analogy to Blood Dragon, but there's an extra layer of camp on top of all this, just with the banter and the kind of personality of the game.
Yeah.
That it's definitely lighter and a little more cheesy than the previous XCOMs.
Well, I mean, specifically also, XCOM 2, which is bleak as fuck.
So holy crap, there's a lot of difference, and I'm not even touching on half of it, but this game, guys. I think I've mainlined like 13, 15 hours of it in just the past week. Absolutely. Like even though all that is different, that XCOM tactics feel is still there, which I really appreciate.
What were you going to say, David?
So you mentioned hybrids. So what we're saying is that XCOM Rule 34 is now canon.
Oh, yeah. Specifically, XCOM Snake Rule 34. the Vipers in XCOM 2 were all decidedly female.
Yeah.
And caused no shortage of a stir in the community. So I'll let everyone Google that on their own.
I'd rather not.
but specifically in XCOM 2, a lot of the plot is that the alien occupying force started mixing human and DNA of the subjugated aliens that they had brought to the planet into these kind of, to make their own army. And that's where the hybrids come, is like, okay, well, in XCOM 2, you win, you beat the bad guys. And the elders, the main villains of all of this, were oppressing the aliens they were using as their invading force as much as they were oppressing humans. And so now like they're gone, yet all these aliens are stuck here. What do you do?
Yeah.
And so the idea is that, one, there's a bunch of hybrids from this genetic modding. So it doesn't have to be Rule 34 unless you want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
and then City 31, which is the city that Chimera Squad takes place in, is this kind of example or the experiment to prove that all these different kind of races, sex, etc., whatever species can make a life together.
Yeah.
So can you, with your team being able to include aliens, can you get what are the guys that are basically the xenomorphs? Are those the chrysalids or something?
Yeah.
Let's see. I haven't seen any chrysalids on our team. I don't think they are, because those are kind of like feral beasts. The like typical gray man aliens you have, the sectoids you have on your team. You have the mutons, which, and sorry for anyone that's not familiar with
big
these
boys.
Guys, but it's like, yeah, the big hulking muscle dudes.
Cyborgs, right?
I don't think they're cyborgs.
No, you're thinking of the hoppers or whatever they are. The mutons are the big football looking dudes who, when they show up on a mission, they get rowdy and beat their chest and crack open some brewskis.
Exactly. And surprise, so they all wear masks when they're bad guys. They look super dopey when they don't have masks on.
Because they act and look dopey anyway.
It's like, oh, you're my cousin Brock.
Yeah.
So yeah, you've got them, and then there's a Viper. So far, I only have the Sectoid and then one of the hybrids on my team.
Hmm. Yeah. I guess my question, you know, so in basic XCOM, or at least XCOM 1 and its expansion, you have, you know, people who are recruited and they have a random class assigned to them, four different classes and multiple opportunities to pick different kind of traits for them. Enemy Within gave you the ability to customize them further into being mechs or into being hybrids, you know, with a cast of, you know, individual people with their own personalities and stuff, I assume with their own backgrounds and their own kind of competencies. Like, how does the class situation work out, and how does like character progression end up shaking out?
Yeah, it is the classes or the individuals, I should say, are clearly inspired by the main classes. Mm-hmm. Particularly, they take inspiration from the roster of four basic classes and then three special classes that was in War of the Chosen.
Okay.
But whereas each of those in XCOM 2 kind of had two different trees, one that focused on one tree each for two different concepts. Mm-hmm. Like the Rangers could focus on stealth, or they could focus on their blades, that sort of thing. These classes seem to kind of put you in one of those lanes, and have more of a dedicated bent with some small variances within that. Their tech trees or their skill trees are not nearly as broad as they were previously. So by way of example, I have two of the specialists on my team, or what I associate with the specialist class, which is the class that has like the gremlin robots that follow them around. They do like hacky kind of and healy stuff. But one of them is very clearly in kind of the medic and support kind of ethos or concept. The other is very clearly in the hacking and kind of android fighting concept.
Okay.
So there's, you know, you can recognize like, oh, that was inspired by this, but each individual feels like its own thing versus variants of a class. They kind of specialize in the ideas that were there before.
Okay.
I guess the other thing to say is the size of the maps is way, way, way shrunk.
Okay.
Like in general, a map I would say is about like 16 by 16.
Wow. And that is,
you can, you know, yeah, you can basically cross it with a full turn if you want. And in XCOM, especially at higher difficulties where everything is about controlling vision and kind of playing at the edges of your range, to have everyone just kind of stuffed in a box together was suffocating at first. Like, it just, and again, this is before I made the connection. I was like, oh, okay, it's not as bad if my people take damage. I was just like, this is terrible. I'm screwed. Like, it is, especially with the new turn order, it's so much more binary. It is this soldier's turn now. You have to do something with them. Mm-hmm. It will be this bad guy's turn next. And there's nothing you can do about that unless you kill that bad guy. Mm-hmm. That feels so incredibly, at first, it felt so incredibly restrictive, mm-hmm, and binary. It's like, okay, I have to take that guy out, and I either can or I can't. And then just, you know, I'm going to take damage. And mm-hmm, that was, you know, in XCOM, the previous games, it was so much about kind of a cascading if then,
yeah,
where it's like, okay, I can move any one of my guys. If I can put damage on this first guy, then I can press that advantage with my other characters. If I miss my first shot, mm-hmm, I can move this way to cover, or I can shift focus to this other weaker enemy. And it's kind of within your turn, you're able to play it out as you, you know, see what happens. Mm-hmm. And that's not really there in the same way in Chimera Squad. What does start happening, or what I did find really intriguing, is while, yeah, you are locked into the turn order by and large, there are rarely characters with skills that can pull someone forward.
Abilities that'll, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But your mentality starts being, how can I get someone to take two? Mm-hmm. And it's like, how do I get ahead in the back and forth? And so can I stun one character and put damage on another with one turn so that next turn I can take out two. Mm-hmm. Then that puts me ahead. And there's the same sense of like, okay, I can either press a rolling advantage or try to recover from a missed shot. But it's now you are going to take damage or kind of have return fire in between those. Mm-hmm. So it's such an interesting twist on the series. And are there in any ways, oh, go ahead.
Are there any bad guys that one shot people though eventually, or
that's a good question. I haven't come across it yet. Okay. And I think I've played about a third of the game.
Okay,
cool. Or a third of the main mission. What I will say is there's the four difficulty levels. And I was like, you know, I'll start on the third. I've done that Iron Man and XCOM 2. I'm really familiar with this franchise. I can probably start there, and got my ass handed to me twice. So I bumped myself back down to the second. No. And have been playing through on that. So on harder difficulties, I absolutely believe you could be in danger of losing a person.
Are you playing
in one hit? That said, you know, I don't know. I haven't played far enough, but it is a punishing game still. And I've gotten through plenty of missions just by the skin of my teeth.
Are you playing it on PC or console?
I'm playing it on PC, and I actually hadn't even checked if this is available on console.
I don't know. It took them a while to get XCOM 2 on anything but PC. So.
And hey, fun fact, XCOM 2 is one of the games that I upgraded my PC for.
Ooh.
So that is, I thankfully can still play this one. Chimera Squad.
Nice.
Let's see. Looks. Yeah, I think it's just on PC for right now.
Yeah. It just came out too. Like, so I could see them wanting to focus on it.
But this is, I mean, it's a really good way to do a sequel, especially when you've got a successful sequel in the books. Mm-hmm. You want to change up the formula, but you don't want to alienate fans. It's like that classic problem of the sequel. And this kind of offshoot, side canon story that's bite-sized. They priced it appropriately for that, but plays with some really cool new ideas. Is just a great way to go about it, because they can fold in what worked into XCOM 3, which I assume is coming. And kind of get a little more aggressively out there on changing up the formula without making people feel like there's an entire development cycle that's been wasted on getting too far away. So, it is, if I'm not playing it, I'm thinking about it right now. So
that sounds like a good place. That sounds like you're describing XCOM to me.
Yes. So. Yes, it is. That is probably the most ringing endorsement I can give it. As a quick aside, I also, well, I'll stop. Any other questions on Chimera Squad?
Well, sounds good.
Yeah. What's the penalty for if a character dies in a mission?
That is a great question. So I've had them get incapacitated, but it's pretty easy to stabilize them. They will get a scar.
Okay.
And that is some kind of debuff that you need to put them into therapy essentially to fix. So they might lose mobility, or they might have their, zero chance to crit are just some of the ones that I've seen.
Okay.
That happens frequently. I have never had someone like bleed all the way out. It is possible to, once they're incapacitated, to have them bleed out and die.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's just a straight up failure or if there's some other, they are gone from the game.
Yeah. I was just curious if they did like a, Fire Emblem permadeath kind of thing.
Yeah. I'm guessing they will, just cause it's XCOM and they're punishing like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the roster of characters is larger than you will use in any one playthrough.
Yeah.
So, hopefully I won't have to experience that for a good while, but
hopefully
I'll let you know when I find out.
Cool.
I also, like I mentioned, I went back and I played XCOM 2, dropped a bunch of, they called it the Legacy Hub, and it was a bunch of free content. And so I played through that in like preparation for Chimera Squad. I had actually started it before I knew about Chimera Squad, and then was like, oh, perfect. Like I'll finish this first before I start Chimera Squad when I found out about it. And it's just a bunch of story side missions that kind of fill in a little bit of the lead up to the main game, which is fun just to have on free stuff is always nice. I appreciate that. But I, just because I was playing through for fun, I set it to just the normal difficulty level. And I'm regretting that because it taught me all sorts of bad habits just getting through it that I'm gonna have to unlearn the next time I try to step up.
Lapses in vigilance.
Yes. And there are just a whole bunch of moments where it's like, okay, if this was on Impossible or if this was on whatever, I would be dead right now. I need to not do that in the future. And then I find myself doing it again just because it's like, but I can right now. Mm-hmm. So, but those are good and they led up. I really appreciate the entirety of those missions led up to one big dad joke. Like it is, they zagged on me. Yeah. I expected them to zig. Well, I don't know. I don't know if I should spoil it. I don't know if anyone cares. Since the plot is not the hugest part of XCOM. But yeah, I will say it prominently features apparel.
Okay.
I don't know how overt to be. It's been out for a while.
Yeah.
The you go on like a big dangerous quest to rescue this special piece of equipment. And at the end of it, it is the combat turtleneck that the commander famously wears.
Oh, Jesus.
it's just a turtleneck.
Yeah, no, that's tactical turtleneck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the tactical turtleneck. Archer has a great bit about the combat turtleneck.
Oh yeah, I knew I was wandering into that neighborhood when I broke out the tactical turtleneck. But
yes, yeah. So lots and lots of XCOM. I think. Played more Hand of Gilgamesh with the kids. Nothing new to say there. I'm almost done with it. Mm-hmm. And that's been me. Lots and lots of XCOM.
But cool. Is the game almost over?
Yes, the game. I think I'm on the last mission. Right. Given that that chapter is titled Hand of Gilgamesh, which is the name of the game.
Yeah.
I feel like that kind of has to be the end, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, isn't Uncharted Among Thieves? Isn't Among Thieves like midway through the game?
Oh, yeah.
And this game is clearly as good as a Naughty Dog game.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I'm happy that one of us played and could talk about Chimera Squad because I've been unable to touch that for busyness reasons. And I mean, if it's making someone who likes this series like you happy, it will.
For busyness reasons, not business reasons.
I mean, because one and the same.
Is there a difference?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There really isn't. Who has something new? Does anybody have anything new?
I have a little bit of something new.
Okay.
So Steam start, you know, occasionally will do free weekends for games.
Okay.
Or now I think they might even be up to 3 weeks, but that's neither here nor there. So from that, I picked up Generation Zero, which is a, yeah, so it's a open world kind of, I guess it would be considered a survival game, although I don't think you ever have to like eat or drink or anything like that. So it's very light on the survival setting. Survival features, but it definitely has that feeling in terms of, you know, really emphasizing, you know, scrounging for ammo, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes place in 1980s Sweden. And I guess the plot is that, you know, Sweden after World War II, where it, you know, remained neutral, basically resolves that, you know, it's a national disgrace that they didn't, you know, stand up to the Nazis and, you know, help the war effort. So they basically institute a policy to, you know, kind of never again, you know, not be able to take care of themselves. And so every, you know, Swedish citizen is, you know, trained in, you know, basic military skills and, you know, that sort of thing.
Okay.
And then inexplicably robots invade.
Okay.
And like it basically like your character and his friends are off you know sailing some boat you know off the coast of Sweden because presumably that is like what all Swedish people do in their spare time.
Okay.
And when it gets, you know, attacked and you're the only survivor, and you basically, it's... kind of wash up on shore.
Okay. And
that's pretty much the game so far. Honestly, I eventually gave up on it. It seems like it's kind of got some interesting things going on with it. But the big problem that I had with it is it seems like the enemies don't really have, as far as I can tell, the enemies don't have a ability for you to like exit combat with them once you start it.
Oh, so there's no way to retreat.
Right. So like you'll go sprinting across the map and you'll be way outside of where they can see you, and they'll somehow like hone in on you. Like I've had instances where I'd like sit in cover for like 5 minutes.
Okay.
And they'd eventually find their way over to wherever I was.
Huh.
So
is that just the AI trying to keep things interesting, or?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, the problem is it doesn't work. Like with the game they're making, there's no regenerating health. Healing items are fairly ineffective and, limited. So, a healing item, you have about 100 HP and a healing item heals about 25.
Ooh.
And in most fights, I would take, depending on the fight, between 25 and 50 points of damage. So it's
and
a
you
thing
can't use them out of combat?
You can use them out of combat, but the problem is just, that it's not sustainable. Without doing a hit-and-run strategy, the game doesn't seem particularly viable, and the system they have for the AI doesn't allow you to do hit-and-run.
Hmm.
So honestly, the game feels like a early access game. Like if this was early access game, it'd probably be a pretty good early access game. But it is not. So I guess hopefully eventually they'll get it together.
Okay.
All games are early access now.
Yeah, it is actually out. So I wanted to make sure it was in early access.
Yeah. So I guess my question is, what's the format of this game? Like, is there a campaign that you're doing, or is it like DayZ where you're on a server and it's you and other people trying to survive as long as you can?
Well, that's one of the little bit of both. It's multiplayer, but I think only cooperative. And to be fair with everything I just said, a little bit comes across like maybe this is a game where like multiplayer is not intended to be optional.
Okay.
But there is a campaign and even side missions, but so far it's pretty much just been go here. So.
Huh.
Go here plus plot reasoning, or literally just here?
I mean, it's basically like, you'll go to a place and, say like early on you go to the church, because that seems to be where survivors are heading. And, you find evidence of the survivors, but there's a note that says like, hey, we had to abandon this area, meet us at the farm west of here. So then you go to the farm west of there. So it's like, yes, there kind of is, but it all kind of boils down to go to place.
Yeah. This doesn't sound great, man.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it has a kind of a unique look and premise and stuff like that. It just, at least right now, doesn't really do anything with it.
Right.
So that's kind of unfortunate. Probably more, kind of better is I've been continuing to play Fallout 76.
Okay.
Let's see here. I've now introduced both factions. So the very first thing you kind of have to do with the new expansion is go and convince both of the factions to let you inoculate them against the Scorch Plague.
Okay.
So that, you know, the zombies don't just retake over Appalachia.
Okay.
And on the for the settlers, I basically went out to one of their forward posts to talk to one of their doctor to get him to vouch for whether the stuff I was saying about inoculation was nonsense. because apparently only anti-vaxxers survived the apocalypse.
Yeah, their heads are thick. The skulls are thick enough that they can probably survive lots of concussions.
Yeah, you know, that seems plausible. So that was kind of more conventional. For the raiders, I had to basically my inexplicably drug-loving robot raider friend basically had me go out to find recordings of the former raider leader that is dead, and so that she could, you know, pick out, you know, individual words and make a message making it look like he was still alive in order to broadcast and like get the raiders to send out representatives.
It's like it's like a puzzle in Gabriel Knight 2.
And then once the leader of the new raider faction showed up, I basically was able to use enough big science words to get them to just agree that I probably knew what I was talking about.
Razzle-dazzle.
Yeah, which basically translated to like having an extremely high intelligence score.
Okay.
So that was kind of fun, and so I've been then kind of playing through, building up a faction with the two camps, which is sort of the new endgame grind.
Okay.
So overall, that's been fun. I am very, very often, though, reminded of just the fact that this is a game that does not understand that this is basically the game that is the ideal game for you if you played the previous Fallout games and felt like they would be great if they were just a little bit more grimdark all the time.
Sounds like a Bethesda thing.
Yeah, but not really a Fallout thing.
Right.
Like, I know. I yesterday I was playing, I had a random encounter where you find a little girl standing in front of the grave of her dead cat that was just killed by a mole rat.
Aww.
And crying about how it was her only friend, and there's like a toy alien on top. If you loot it, she says, "No, don't take, Lucy's toy." And then that's it.
Huh.
It's like, no, there has to be some, there's no, like, I feel like in order to be Fallout, like having that, pathos, that's great. But then the other half of the Fallout equation is when you go on a quest to like get her a new pet, and she ends up somehow with like a pet death claw or something.
Yeah.
Like yeah, exactly. Like they have not at all gotten the feeling of that. So like, or like, doing the my robot friends quest line, one of the raider factions is basically sets themselves up. They're like the diehards, and they call themselves, and like, they dress
you know, very, very like stereotypically Mad Max, you know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And basically their entire thing is that they act like crazy raiders so that they won't have to actually kill anyone.
All bark, no bite. Yeah.
Right. And then when like the zombie apocalypse happens and like people are desperate enough that they don't really, you know, are willing to take that risk, mm-hmm. the leader of the faction basically decides they're not going to, you know, sacrifice their humanity. So instead they just overdose themselves on chems. It's like,
oh,
that's just depressing. Like that's not anything. That just sucks.
Yeah, you took a Fallout setup and then you gave it a conclusion from a different series.
The Road.
Yeah. So it's
back, you know, to the source material. Why do you do that?
Yeah. So I mean, it's really there are definitely a number of things where it's like, what the heck are you doing here? On the plus side, a lot of that stuff, maybe all of it that I've actually been talking about, I think was pre like Wastelanders setup. So the you know, kind of the new material seems like it's much more kind of fun loving and silly.
Right, right. Well, I mean, at least that shows that they're moving in the right direction, even if there is legacy bummer stuff.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So and I do like that they at least make the new raider faction somewhat sympathetic,
mm-hmm.
in that, you know, they're not just, you know, a bunch of, you know, psychopaths.
Mm-hmm. Not just a bunch of cannibals in S&M gear.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Which again, one of the factions, straight up cannibals. It's like
A little bit of nuance there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think actually my two favorite things with that faction is so sentry bots, if you haven't played the game a lot, sentry bots are basically a robot equivalent of like a tank. They're one of the most dangerous enemies in the game. They have like dual chain guns arms, and generally speaking, when you kill them, basically a mini nuke goes off.
Oh,
mm-hmm. Ooh, nice. So they're super powerful. However, one of the new like settler kind of groups factions has a sentry bot called Bessie. That doesn't have its hand cannons anymore and apparently thinks that it is a cow.
Okay.
And is, you know, painted with like cow spots all over it.
Okay.
And so, and you know, their voice is just this very deep, you know, kind of robotized voice. So mm-hmm. it's running around, you know, moo. Moo.
That's like voices good. From last week's podcast.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Oh. Similarly, all of the vendors in the settler faction are this series of robots named Sunny. They're all named Sunny, and they all insist that they are the only real Sunny, and that the other Sunny bots are not to be trusted. And you know, you can go and you can either tell them, you know, you are the best Sunny, or like Kitchen Sunny is the best Sunny or whatever, and just weird stuff like that. So yeah. You know, they're definitely bringing back some of that.
Yeah, that's good.
So
yeah,
that's all I've really got. Any questions?
No, I don't know that I have any questions. Have you run into anybody? Or are you not playing it online?
It's online only, so occasionally run into people. Haven't had any particularly noteworthy things. You know, every so often I'll get into a higher level group event. And those have generally, at least for me, been pretty positive experiences.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people generally working together and, you know, just seem to have a good approach to it. So that's nice because, you know, sometimes those sorts of things can get kind of nasty.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. Is that all you had? Generation Zero, Fallout 76. Cool. Ben, I will go to you now.
I got a medium one and a small one.
Okay.
Small one is I played Rocket League over the weekend.
Ooh.
They're doing this shocking thing. Yeah. Well, actually, I mean, I've stopped playing it. It's not a game I play every week anymore. But I played it this week. And they have this thing where they're adding modes just for the weekend that you can play.
Oh.
That are pretty fun, and then that's it. They'll be gone after that. And so you have a very like limited opportunity to play them. So they had one a couple weeks ago that I missed where it was basically like the ball was like a magnet attracted to the goal. And so it was like this weird system where you didn't really have to be as precise with hitting the ball towards the goal. And conversely, like you had to be much more defensive about like being able to knock the ball away since it was like more likely to be able to be directed towards the goal. And it was apparently fun. I didn't play it, but apparently it's going to come back and make another appearance sometime this month or during the weekend.
Cool.
But the one that I played this weekend was one where they combined two modes. There's a mode called Drop Shot. I don't know if you remember me talking about it since it was years ago when I did.
This is where the floor falls out, right?
Yes. So when the ball hits the floor, it'll highlight a hex. The ball has like three states that it can be in, and that determines like how many hexes it highlights.
Okay.
And then, so it might be like one, it might be a ring around one, or it might be two rings around a single hex or whatever. So it gets mm-hmm. pretty big if it gets to the third state. The state that it's in depends on like basically how many times people have hit it since it's hit the ground.
Okay.
So like the longer it goes, the higher volatility it is. Anyway, they combined this with this mode that they have called Rumble, which is a mode that they added like 2 years ago or so, where it's like you have these power-ups every 10 seconds that just do like random things. Like one is like your car has spikes on it, so if you hit the ball it gets attached onto your car, and then you can in the regular game just go make beeline for the goal and try and take it in. There's like a plunger that'll drag the ball behind you and like pull it towards you. There's a bunch of things like this in the Rumble mode, and so they added that to Drop Shot, and it was a very bizarre, and even though they had both those mechanics existed before, it was a very unique experience like bringing them together. So it's just cool to kind of have new, like a new vocabulary of how to play and like new strategies. So I only played that for a little bit, but that was a lot of fun. So I don't know what Rocket League's doing anymore. It's like the game's been out for like 4 or 5 years, but they're still developing it. It's like, okay, sure. Maybe, I don't know. I guess there's people who still play it who are really good. And like the meta is even developed too. There's like this move where if you, turn around in midair and like, I don't know, you know, hit it with the back of your car or something like that. Like that does something different. And then there's like another thing that people are doing where if they land their car on the ball in midair, they get an extra jump. And so people are abusing that, where they're like hitting the ball in the air, landing on it, then jumping and continuing to juggling it and then landing on it again and stuff like that.
That speaks to an ability to control in this game that is unfathomable to me.
Right.
Like
No one can do. I can barely like be in the same half.
People can do things on purpose.
Yeah,
this isn't the game for that.
Yeah. So yeah, thankfully I don't get matched up with those people. So I guess the downside is I don't get to see it. But on the plus side, I don't get to see it. Okay. But yeah. So that's fun. And apparently there's going to be new content as the month progresses every weekend. So that'll be cool to see where that goes. Yeah. The other thing I've been playing is I've continued to play Luigi's Mansion. I'm on the penthouse floor, so I'm almost done with the game, presumably, unless they do like a, Castle of Burgundy. What is it? The vampire game where they turn the house upside down.
I really like Castle of Burgundy.
It's a board game.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, it's
Castlevania.
Castlevania Symphony of the Night, where you think you're at the end and then there's a whole other castle that's upside down to go to.
Yeah, so unless they do any shenanigans like that, I think I'm at the end of the game. Overall, it's a fine game. It is the Luigi to Mario, where it's not as good of a game as Mario Odyssey, for sure. But it still like has a lot of really creative moments in it. So there's definitely parts that are good. Mm-hmm. If you're a kid, like 100% buy this game for your kid if your kid wants to play it. You know what I mean? Because it's like there's not really a downside there, and they don't really have good quality control. But overall, it's like I guess I don't regret playing it. I will put it that way. I don't have a bitter taste in my mouth as I do other games, like maybe Assassin's Creed Odyssey towards the end of it. But I don't know. It's still creative. Every floor is like something completely different. So it seems like it would have been a lot of fun to develop as a game. And each floor is like really well executed. There's a few that are actually aren't that great. The 14th floor, for example, was just like a single boss fight that was very underwhelming and took maybe 5 minutes start to end. Mm-hmm. But you know, so some of them are hit or miss, but anyway, that's about all I got. So now, now I need new games to play. So I got a new game, which I'll talk about next week when I've actually played it, since I haven't played it yet. Mm-hmm. And then I'll probably play XCOM because that sounds really good.
It does.
It's some fun stuff.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. I'm happy you're enjoying Luigi's Mansion 3.
Wait, is it 3? I thought it was just...
Yeah. Nope, it's Luigi's Mansion 3. one came out on GameCube. There was a 3DS game called Dark of the Moon, and then this one is Luigi's Mansion 3.
I'm sick of these, like, celebrity millionaires with all these mansions.
It's not even, like, he doesn't even own it. It's just a hotel that he goes to. Nice. So that all you had, Ben?
Yep.
Cool. All that I have is, I've played a few more hours of the Final Fantasy VII remake. I'm continuing to have a good time. Things opened up a little bit for me, since I last spoke, cause I kind of got out of the initial kind of like mission, you know, like intro stuff. And it like sets you loose to do like side quests in the slums of, Sector 7, which is real neat. Actually, it kind of reminds me a little bit of Yakuza. And I cannot remember if that is a comparison that I came up with on my own or if I saw that on Twitter. But if I saw it on Twitter, I definitely can't remember who I saw it from. So we're just going
we'll
to
have to,
we're just going to have to live with that. No, but it's like, you know, like the story takes place in chapters and you have like the main quest that you can choose to follow. But like, you know, a lot of the side stuff you can do is like, there are shopkeepers and citizens around the town who are like looking for help and you're trying to build up Cloud's reputation as a mercenary. So you're doing like some like regular kind of stuff like, oh, we need to go clear these drakes out of this, you know, factory where people go and scavenge. Right. Or there's like, oh, this little girl lost her three favorite cats. So you need to go find them. And there's funny stuff like that you do to get them back. Yeah. Yeah. It's a little bit like that. But like the small stakes of it make it feel very much like a Yakuza kind of thing. Especially because like you are in this kind of crowded and teeming area. And I got to say, it's like real cool to get to see a little bit more of like basically what life is like in Midgar compared to the very little bit that you got just kind of in the sparsely populated version of it that you saw on the PlayStation.
I thought generally your, you know, actions in the first game were, you know, making it so that there's not life on Midgar.
That's an accident. It's an accident. but you know, you're doing the same thing too. It wasn't your intention to blow. All you wanted to do was deactivate the reactor, not blow it up. you're a terrorist, but not a terrorist. Something else that's kind of cool, and I know some people have kind of like bucked back against this as like, hey, maybe this wasn't something we necessarily really wanted, kind of getting to know your the people who are part of your, for lack of a better word, terrorist cell, like the other Avalanche people who like were incidental characters and they had names and some personalities in the main game, but you spend so little time you spend so little time with them in the original. Here though, they're like, they're voice acted, and like the big guy, Wedge, his voice actor is the actor who played Badger on Breaking Bad, which is really funny. because he just sounds like Badger from Breaking Bad. But no, like they're fun. Like the characters are generally fun, and there's like, you know, good emotional moments between like you and Tifa, and you know, everything kind of benefits from being more cinematic. You know, I just like I'm a mark for this. I am happy to be kind of along for the ride, and all of this would be moot if the combat wasn't good and if the mechanics weren't good. But like, I'm still really enjoying the pressure and stagger system, and they've, you know, opened up more kind of customization. Like they bring the materia system back. Has everybody here played Final Fantasy VII?
No,
how
not
do they
all the way through.
Not have the materia system? Isn't that kind of the whole game?
No, they do. Like they have the they have the materia system, which is good. Quick version. In the original, your character didn't really have, they basically had starting stats, but you had these special gems that you slotted into your weapons and armor that both gave you abilities and also changed your stats and stuff. And the materia leveled up as you gained special experience. And you could kind of like transfer stuff around in between people in addition to the experience that you had just by fighting stuff. They bring that back here, but they also have weapon customization stuff that you can do, which is like little individual stat boosts that you can select for different weapons. In addition to the fact that most of the weapons have a special skill that you can learn, kind of like Final Fantasy IX a little bit. As you use that weapon, you basically learn it. And you can keep it around even if you don't have that equipped. Oh gosh, what else am I thinking of? I don't know. It's just good.
So here's my question is, you know, let's say you had to make a choice between getting this, the remake, or just a completely new Final Fantasy, which do you think you would go with?
I'm good with this one. I don't know. Like,
you feel like they do enough new within it that,
yeah, you know,
it scratches that itch.
Which is the better remake so far, this game or Resident Evil 3?
I don't know.
Resident Evil 2.
Resident Evil 2. Yeah, Resident Evil 2 is the best of all of them, I think, in terms of doing, you know, both new things and also really honoring the feel of the of the original. This is such a conversion that it's actually really hard to like compare them. Like, you're hitting a lot of the same story beats, but like the way that you interact with this and kind of the scope of the story is both, it's like it's way more zoomed in, but there's so much more detail, you know. You know, so like this is good and satisfying. Like they both expanded it. They've expanded it mechanically but restricted it like in the scope of the story. Like I'm kind of worried / bummed out that I'm gonna get to the end of this and then it'll be another 7 years before we get part two or whatever it is, but we'll cross that bridge when we get there.
Wait, have they announced that, or is this your speculation that there's going to be a part two?
No, there's going to be a part two. This only goes through the end of the end of Midgar, which is like halfway through disc one. So, and like they've said, yeah, this, you know, the part two is basically in planning right now, so who knows what that means, but I don't know where I would rank this against like RE3, because like Resident Evil 3 is almost like an expansion for RE2, where it is still really fun to play, but it's not like necessarily a very faithful adaptation of the original three Nemesis.
And this is more though a pre-expansion for the rest of Final Fantasy VII Remake, though, right?
I mean, kind of. it's the first installment.
I'm just wondering about the kids how confused they must be when someone says, like, you know, this is only halfway through disc one, because, you know, not only do they not have any frame of reference of like what happened on the original Final Fantasy VII discs, but they also are unaware that at one point people bought games on discs.
Yeah, and that they're what it meant to switch between them. Yeah, you know, like even if you go and get like a digital copy of Final Fantasy VII now, like if you buy it on PSN, I think there's like a digital disc swapping that needs to happen. But like if you buy just like the regular remaster that came out, you know, for Steam and, you know, Switch and stuff like that, I mean, it's like it's literally just one big thing. You know, there is no disc break. I mean, see the gag in Metal Gear Solid 4 where Otacon comes in and tells you, hey, you need to switch the disc. Oh, wait, this is a Blu-ray. Never mind. Yeah. Any other questions about Final Fantasy VII, the remake?
Yeah, glad you're enjoying it.
Yeah, it's good.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what's the question that you ask the nice people?
Yeah, and this is not so much me as a suggestion from OMG Moose. So thank you, dude.
Yeah, thank you.
And their idea was to ask, what is the most impractical thing that you've owned for gaming and what motivated you to keep it around? So I like the broadness of this. Could be a peripheral, could be you know, hardware, could be anything.
Yeah, getting in before somebody says, my Wii U. The Wii U's a good system. That's I didn't look and see if anybody said that, so we'll find out.
I thought of the joke, but I didn't think of the punchline. Wii U is probably the most fitting punchline for that.
I'm going to start here with Patrick, who says, I bought a Virtual Boy on clearance from KB Toys. It was something like $30, and I only kept it because it was a weird Nintendo artifact to own. Shit, man, I'd like to own a Virtual Boy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, that's good. Let's see here. Has everyone
actually played one of them, or
what's that? Rare?
I said, has everyone actually played a Virtual Boy at one point, or is that
rare? I have not.
My cousins had one, so I got to play it. Got to play like the tennis game, like the Mario tennis game on it, and then like some kind of, it was like a Descent clone.
Yeah. I have the weirdest memory of being at, of all things, a dog training competition. My dad trained like hunting dogs, and so you'd do competitions for that. And just in the back of a pickup truck, some kid being like, "Hey, you want to check this out?"
Yeah.
And that was when I got to try the Virtual Boy.
Man, even then I knew, I was like, hey, this probably can't be good for my eyes.
This is probably terrible.
Yeah. Let's see, David, what does OMG Moose say?
So Omega Moose says, might as well share mine for this. When I went off to college, I built a gaming PC that would do everything, which ended up meaning a full tower case made of rolled steel. Ooh. It weighed over 30 pounds and was over 3 feet tall.
Do everything or survive everything?
I mean, he wants to be able to crawl into it in case there's some kind of nuclear blast.
Yeah. That's seeming more and more like a smart move.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. I thought I could add stuff to it later and make it do everything I ever needed since it had so much space. In reality, I never did. It was a huge pain to move, and of like the 85 quarter-inch bays, only one of them ever got anything in it. Since then, every PC I've owned has had a small case made of aluminum.
Probably wise. Man, like, so if I had ever seen a full tower case before I... Before, you know, back at the studio where I worked, they ordered a rendering machine. I didn't remember it. Like, when you see one of those, it's like, it looks like a filing cabinet. It's like a prop from some kind of movie. They're really, really big.
How does this compare to like a, like circa year 2000, like conventional PC?
So I don't know
what we're talking about.
I mean, so I don't know what the I don't know when the standard, like the case standard sizes came in, but like, you know, my Windows PC right here that is about the same size as most PCs I've had since, you know, around that time, is like a half ATX. So like, picture something that is about twice as tall as like a regular ass just like a regular PC case that you're thinking of.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a lot. Let's see here. Ben, what does Dulce say?
Dulce says, I had the DK bongos for the GameCube, and I think I forgot about them until my controllers died. I used these bongos as controllers for at least 6 months. They were super uncomfortable, but I was a broke kid who couldn't afford new controllers, but wanted to keep playing games.
Hey.
And then and DK see no evil.
That's some impressive dedication.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, just and if you keep him around, you can do little stunt runs on Dark Souls with him. Yeah. Dennis, what does Austin say?
Austin says, I once paid $40 for a soft DDR dance pad that you had to body slam just to make it work. Also, not something I bought, but was a gift, was a set of SNES controllers that let you change the setting of the movement. Change the setting on the movement and button presses, and they seem to only change to worse or unplayable.
Yeah. it's a controller that you can make not work with the press of a button. Ollie writes, I have a chainsaw controller for my GameCube. It came with Resident Evil 4, and it is atrocious to use to actually play games with, but it's cool, and so I used it as my second controller for a long time, and would use it when playing games against friends, when I would lose at almost everything. Mario Power Tennis was particularly awkward with it. But you're just giving yourself a handicap. Like you have an excuse built in. I'd like to see you do better while holding a chainsaw.
And then they offer and be like, no, it's my favorite controller.
Yeah.
No, it's my favorite excuse. I mean, controller.
I love that chainsaw controller. It is a monument to inelegance. It's amazing. Similarly, the slime controller that came with Dragon Quest VIII, I think it was, there was some game, it might've been Onimusha, but I could be forgetting one of the Onimusha games that came with a PS2 controller that was like in the handle of a katana.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Wait, you said that I remember something for like, was it Wii? Something like that? Maybe not.
I mean, there were definitely like inserts you could get, like you could put, you know, like a sword that you could put your Wii remote into. Let's see here. David, what does Greg say?
Oh, sorry. I was busy searching for katana controller. I got my Xbox.
I mean, all katanas are kind of a controller just for, you know, life and death.
It's just one button. Mm-hmm. Kill.
Greg says, when I got my Xbox 360 new, I realized that I might need a second controller for when a friend came around. And not wanting to spend top dollar on another controller, I missed the days when systems came with two. I picked up a used third-party controller for cheap at the same GameStop where I bought the system at. It was truly awful. Don't recall who made it. The answer is Mad Catz. It looked like the cheap bastard child of a joystick with the regular controller. Felt cheap and flimsy and was very uncomfortable in your hands. The few times I did play head-to-head against someone in my apartment, I always used the junk controller myself because I felt so bad at how terrible it was.
Yeah. Love that.
Yeah, I'm like 90% certain it was Mad Catz.
I mean, that was definitely the joke brand, you know, back in the day. Like, oh man, I forget the name, like the brand name of it. The only thing that was actually like worse, there was a line of controllers that had fans built inside of them so that it would like cool your palm so you didn't get sweaty or whatever. But the thing is, the actual controller, like the button components and stuff, were not very good. Additionally, because this thing was circulating air, I know this because people traded them in when I worked at the GameStop, none of them didn't smell like just pure uncut ass.
It just collected fans to spread it around too.
Yeah. You know, I mean, just anything that was traded in had a little bit of a, let's call it a patina. especially like the used system room, you know, it was full of GameCubes that reeked of Chinese food and bong water, but these controllers had that plus hand funk and sweat funk in it.
Oh no.
Let's see here. Ben, what does Martinez say?
Martinez says, every piece of garbage plastic instrument I have bought to fuel my Guitar Hero / Rock Band addiction. Obviously, I had to spend way too much on complete sets so we could play as a full band. These days, my Xbox 360 Guitar Hero 2 guitar sees any use, and the rest is junk, or the rest of the junk is gathering dust in the attic.
Hey, that's on you, because you're not playing the games anymore. It's not on the games or the instruments themselves. Don't make this about them. Yeah, no, I mean, this is basically my answer. And Dennis, I feel personally attacked by you posting the Mustang controller.
Yes.
But I'll address that later on. Dennis,
we have the first co-host kicked off the show.
Banned forever. It was a good 11 years, Dennis.
who knew the Mustang was the weak spot?
Dennis, what does Lindsay say before your execution?
Yeah, Lindsay says the rocket launcher that came with Super Scope 6 was designed to be impossible for an 8-year-old to use. I remember using it more as a toy than a game. My brother found it a few years ago and kept it. He still has it in his dorm in college as a joke.
Nice.
I need to look up what this is. Is this like one of those old handheld games or what?
No, Super Scope was like the, so you know how the NES had the zapper? The little pistol thing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The Super Scope was like a longer, like rifle rocket launcher kind of thing.
Oh,
yeah, it's actually kind of neat.
The one that's in Smash Bros.
Yes, I think there are both. I think that there is a zapper that that Rob uses, but there is a Super Scope in Smash Brothers. Nice. Yeah. Also, happy birthday, Lindsay. Jala popped into the comments to say happy birthday. Yeah. Let's see here. Callum says, I have ended up with two full sets of Guitar Hero band instruments. As we still occasionally play those games, I keep them in case anything breaks. Yeah, because, man, fuck trying to get replacements now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then
especially replacements that don't smell like ass.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, like all of the you can clean one of those things. It's all hard plastic with the exception of the drum pads, and even those don't tend to absorb a lot of stink on them. Yeah. Let's see here, David, round us out with what Robert says.
Robert says flight stick. Used maybe twice and still have for some reason. Great dust collector.
Yeah. Nobody has said Steel Battalion set, because if you have one of those, you love your life and everything about it, because you have a Steel Battalion set and it rules. Yeah, I mean, my answer is, I mean, this would imply that I regret having it, but definitely the most awkward stuff is all of my Rock Band paraphernalia. But like, I don't know, it's not been that huge of a deal to like move it from closet to closet and pull it out. Like right now, a lot of it is sitting in waterproof plastic containers at my garage, just up on shelves in case I decide to pull it out, with the exception of one guitar that is just inside if I get the if I get a hankering for it. But yeah,
gotta have that emergency ripcord guitar.
Yeah, sometimes you just want to play, sometimes you just want to play Guitar Hero or Rock Band. They're fun games. But yeah, like the Mustang is definitely one that like I liked. So the Mustang is like the pro guitar controller that is not the actual guitar with like the MIDI reader on it. It is literally like 144 button. There's something like that. It was like 44 buttons or 144 buttons. Guitar where you have a button for each fret on each string, so you can like finger chords and things like that, and you have six strings to strum and pluck. It was real fun. It would be a terrible way to learn guitar, but I had a good time with it. I definitely have not used it very much since, 2012 or so, let's say.
Yeah, just because an object sticks around doesn't mean that you have to keep using it. Like, you probably got your worth out of that time and time again.
Yeah. And, I'm looking over at my real guitars that I can pull out and play now too. So, and I can play it because, I can play it, whenever I want, because I'm in a house. I'm not in an apartment where I was before, So, yeah. That's mine. David, how about you?
Yeah, so mine's going to be just a little bit different in that it's going to be about what crazy accessory I don't own.
Okay.
So
growing up, my first video game system I ever got is I got a used NES with a whole bunch of games, and definitely some really great ones. You know, probably the most lasting impact being the original Dragon Warrior.
Yep.
Or Dragon Quest. However, one of the games was Gyromite.
Oh, yeah. Oh, shit.
Problem being that I did not have a Rob, which is the weird robot. Oh, no.
Yeah, Gyromite, he puts little tops on the buttons, and that changes the stage.
Right. And one of the most enraging things about it, that I actually didn't realize the actual cause until literally like 5 minutes ago where I pulled up the article, is apparently the way the system actually worked is that you like put an NES controller, you know, in the Rob setup or whatever, and, you know, control the robot with the other controller.
Mm-hmm.
And that would cause the robot to like manipulate the spinning top so that it pressed buttons on the second NES controller.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that's relevant is there were a couple times in which I got the game to like work and do stuff, but I could never figure out how. You know, like it would work one time and then I'd try it again. And apparently it was because you had to actually control the game via the second controller.
Mm, yeah. So is it just
so, yeah, at some point I just happened to like pick up the wrong controller and the game worked or whatever. So, yeah, so that was the weirdest accessory that I don't own. I'm not sure of any weird ones I do own. Mm-hmm. Probably the one with fondest memories would be Bokutai with its built-in light thingy.
Hmm. Yeah, no, the solar sensor.
Yeah.
Nice.
Also, weirdest stealth game I've ever played.
that was Hideo Kojima.
Yep.
Yeah. Let's see here. Ben, how about you?
I don't really have much video game peripherals. The only one I ever had was I think Rock Band 4, maybe the one that had a keyboard with it.
Yeah, Rock Band 3. Yeah. All
right, and so that, and I guess I had a controller at one point, but I don't know where that went either. So those things, but I guess they're not here, so they're not really taking up room. So I don't know.
Yeah. No, that controller was also useful. Like you could take a MIDI cord and like use that as a yeah. like an actual like keyboard.
But I also have a keyboard.
Okay, true. All right. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, so mine is Guitar Hero related, but not in the way you think. I, you know, my main Guitar Hero days were Guitar Hero 3 back in college on an old-ass CRTV that weighed 6 billion pounds.
Yeah, yeah.
And playing on literally anything else just did not feel right. And
because so that of the lag, TV, yeah.
Because of the lag. Yeah. Even though you can adjust for it, mm-hmm. I could just never get it out of my head that it might be off. And so that TV has followed us from house to house and is in our basement now.
Uh-huh.
Just because I probably haven't used it in multiple years.
Mm-hmm.
But if I ever do want to play, that is the place to go play on.
Yeah. No, CRTs are hard to get a hold of now.
Mm-hmm.
I've been on the lookout for ones just out on curbs here, but like I can never get to them when people throw them out before it rains. There was a really good console CRT that I wanted to get. It's like a big old cabinet. Like now, I'll keep it in a corner and like set a record player on top of it or something just to make it a tower to obsolescence. but no dice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
gotta move quick, man.
Yep. Cool. Well, thanks everybody for writing in with your answers. If you would like to participate in the future, you can go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. Thank you to OMG Amoose for suggesting the prompt, and thank you to Dennis for putting it up.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games that are exciting to us for some reason. I've got one for some reason.
Way to start it.
So judgmental.
But no, for you know, any reason. I don't want to say it's a good reason. Maybe it's exciting to you for a bad reason. I don't know. This one might be exciting to me for a bad reason. So you know, fan projects of Nintendo related things are common, but you never see them. Like, basically they're reported on and then they're immediately squashed. That is probably going to happen to this if it has not already happened. But a fan developer has created a version of Super Mario 64 for Windows. It's not emulated. It just runs directly in DirectX 12. You just load it up and fire it up and you play a full version of Mario 64 at your computer, you know, whatever resolution you want. You're not, you know, trying to fight with any kind of N64 emulation, which is really spotty. It is literally just Mario 64 on your PC. This is the result of a couple of different, basically data leaks and cracks that have come out specifically about the way that, like, the N64 natively interprets files and things like that. I've looked around, trying to find like a downloadable executable of this, but I have not been able to. Basically any forum where people are discussing this has a rule against linking to or distributing pirated stuff, which is what this absolutely is. And I started digging deeper than I dug to deeper places than I would feel safe downloading stuff from, you know, there. And people were saying like, oh yeah, all you have to do is like download the source code from this Git repository and then, you know, dump the assets from the ROM and boom, bada bing, bada boom, there you go. And it's like, I don't know how to do that. Can I get a .exe file, please? Preferably untainted by malware. So I was hip to this. I saw Allison posting about this and kind of giving it rave reviews for how usable it is and for kind of just how remarkable it is to play this game on your computer like that. But you know, now, as you know, it's 10:30 p.m. on the day that it is put out, I expect that Nintendo's cease and desist order is going to drop so hard and so fast that the shockwave will cause lights to flicker. So who knows how long this is going to be a going concern, especially considering the fact that Nintendo is, they have announced that they are bringing a Switch port of Mario 64, I think this year or next year. So
yeah, it was called Super Mario Odyssey. It's great.
But if, you know, it's, but yeah, like, it looks cool in the videos. I don't know, they give me a hankering to play some Mario 64. It's a fun ass game, at least the first half of it. No, it's just it's more fun learning how to play it than actually doing like the challenges and stuff. Like the whole game is fine, but like, you know, it, for me, it wears out its welcome after you know, get all the novelty of it.
Yeah, at a certain point it starts to feel a little sadistic towards you.
Yes. But it's still a good and very important game overall.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, that's mine. Let's see going on here. Dennis, what's going on with Star Wars and VR? If you say May the 4th be with you, I will kick you off of the show.
You know, I'm just gonna go find a different story. I've already spent enough goodwill here. No, so Star Wars Vader Immortal, the VR experience, which is, it's weird they insist so much it's an experience, not a game.
Yeah,
it's like, oh god, that's usually like a hallmark of like, oh, this is gonna be bad. But no, Vader Immortal is apparently pretty good. Mm-hmm. I have to say apparently, because I own a PSVR and it did not come out there.
Mm-hmm. It was it was an Oculus exclusive. It came with my Oculus Quest. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So you might be able to speak to it better than I. Mm-hmm. It is coming to PSVR later this summer, which is very exciting. You know, like I said, it was reviewed. It seems like something I'd want to try. The other interesting thing is that it's Ninja Theory behind the game, which, yeah, at least they've been partnering with Ninja Theory for the PSVR port.
Okay.
Which I took that to mean that Ninja Theory also worked on the original game. And if that's true, that means there's hope that the Hellblade VR game will come to PSVR eventually.
Wasn't Ninja Theory acquired by Microsoft?
Oh shit. No, they're definitely working alongside Ninja Theory. I think you are right in saying that they were acquired by Microsoft. However, the article clearly states they're working alongside Ninja Theory.
Nice.
What exactly that means, I don't know. I would love to get Senua's Sacrifice, the VR version on PSVR. They were pretty clear that was never going to happen, one, because of the acquisition, two, because it is not exactly easy on the specs, and PSVR is among the weaker VR headsets. Mm-hmm. So my guess, seeing that Vader is coming to PSVR, is that we will eventually get the VR Hellblade for PS5.
Okay, yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. But yeah, good games coming to more platforms is always great, especially in the VR world, keeping it accessible as possible.
Yeah, more stuff specifically coming to PSVR, which is the most accessible, you know, price-wise, I think setup and hardware-wise of any of these, that is always going to be good. You know, I fired up, like I said, it came with my Oculus Quest. I did basically a half hour of part one because it shipped in like three episodes or whatever. I didn't get to any like lightsaber stuff. It was mostly like moving around in starships and stuff like that, which is fun, you know, but it wasn't enough to have me pick it back up. The fact that Ninja Theory might be associated with it makes me think that maybe the sword fighting might actually be badass. So I'm very curious to go back and see now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Let's see, Ben, what's happening with Evo? I guess, yeah, or is Evo happening?
Some kind of good news to cut against how South by Southwest handled coronavirus stuff. Evo announced that they're not going to be having a convention this year. Makes sense. Las Vegas is still shut down, from what I understand, at least casino wise.
Yep.
But the way they're handling it, they're refunding all the tickets for people who bought them. They're automatically refunding all the hotel rooms for people who bought hotel rooms for it. And then they're going to move the event to online, but they haven't talked about the details of how they're going to do that yet.
Right.
I see it as a positive news story where they're still going to make Evo happening. They're handling it really well for anybody who already bought into it. So way to go, Evo.
Yeah. I mean, it's got to suck for them financially. I have no idea what their insurance situation is, but it's definitely the right thing to do. And if they screwed over people this year, maybe some of them would have understood, but that would definitely be a PR hit that would hurt them, you know, in years coming. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot of, you know, conferences and cons are going to some kind of digital version that feels decidedly less viable for a fighting game tournament than for others.
Yeah. I kind of on a similar note, I watched a chess tournament over the weekend, and that was the same sort of deal where everyone's just playing online now. Yeah. It's like a very different experience.
Yeah. I have no idea. I mean, like, look at the difference between, you know, playing poker in person and online poker, you know, where one has the element of like literally understanding the person's body language and the other is just about the odds. And I have no idea. I don't know enough to say which is more effective.
The other is closed optional.
Yeah.
I feel like that.
There's a lot of in-person poker that's closed optional, but we won't go there.
I mean, progressively closed optional.
See, I feel like that's sort of like the difference between, you know, drinking at a bar and drinking alone.
Okay.
Wait, which one's better in this situation?
You know, it's up to you.
I mean, right now or in general.
Do I need to feel personally on blast for this whiskey or I'm sorry, whiskey. I mean, goo gone. No. David, what is going on with Kojima?
So this is straight up a me stealing cause patented, here's a thing that exists strategy. But the New York Times has a interesting kind of, I guess, profile on Kojima that more or less revolves around, like, why the heck do people like Kojima?
Yeah.
I don't know how to feel when someone would approach me and be like, hey, we want to do a news story, a feature, in fact, on why people actually like you.
Yeah. So I joke about that. It's actually, you know, very positive, very interesting, yeah. But it is to a significant degree kind of trying to explain, like, why he is, you know, I don't know, a phenomena thing, whatever you want to say.
I mean, the fact that this is a New York Times magazine, like, they're not trying to justify him to us. Like, he doesn't necessarily have anything to prove to people who know games, but, like, this seems to be explaining it to normies.
Right, exactly.
I mean, non-derogatorily, but just people who may not be aware that, like, video games, you know, have a history of auteurs, yes, but also here is one who is really active and their work is really pronounced, right?
Yeah, I feel like there's also kind of an interesting dynamic to it of, like, how do you explain, like, even examples of the weird stuff in, say, like, the Metal Gear Solid series without any context?
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, they have a section where they're, you know, they briefly explain, like, talk about, like, the Psycho Mantis fight. But it's like, that just sounds like nonsense if you're, you know, not a gamer, like, even explained.
If you're not aware that, like, switching the port that your controller is plugged into is just not a dumb thing, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Just to, like, so much of, I mean, specifically, like, Psycho Mantis, you know, is probably the most pronounced example of this. Sorry, I'm using the word pronounced a lot, but, like, oh, like, a lot of this is special because it upends assumptions. How do you explain that to people who do not carry those assumptions?
Right, exactly.
It's hard to do on a generalized sense. Usually you can, like, if you're talking to an individual, you can relate it to their thing or something in the world of their thing, but
nice. This is a nice long form article. I'm going to put that over on my iPod or iPad and mess it around. Put it over to my iPod Nano. Read it line by line.
Also, David, the original link you shared from just kind of a Hacker News board that then linked to this, I was so sure you were giving us the Mario DirectX game.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Oh, yeah. No, sorry.
Yeah.
No. Hacker News is my go-to for just a little bit different take on some of these things. So yeah, that's where I find most of these.
Nice. Cool. Well, that sounds like a show to me. How do you all feel about bundling it up?
Buttons.
The credit. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this episode of The Level number 328. That was my grandpa's birthday, March 28th. Happy birthday, Grandpa. Rest in peace. Hopefully nobody's voice did the lower thing. However, my backup recording is free of clicks, so if it got real bad, I can go and do some find and replace. That is fine.
I'm hoping mine did, and I request that it not be taken out.
Okay. All right. I can pitch shift all of you. Just make you incomprehensible.
Auto-tune the level.
Yeah, Pixie.
But if you're listening, there are plenty of things you can do. The Duck Feed Patreon has a lot. Just if you are looking for content, the $5 level has a show that me and Gary do about Lovecraft film adaptations. We recently covered Reanimator, which is an amazing movie that I would recommend people watch, A, but also B. I think the episode about it was fun. Just a bunch of stuff there. Patreon.com/DuckFeedTV. But for this show in particular, ratings and reviews, come join us in the DuckFeed Slack, in the channel there, to talk about stuff and, you know, share games and experiences and stuff. And of course, look for the multiplayer prompts to go up on Facebook, facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Is there anything I'm forgetting, folks?
Thank you. Good.
Okay, cool. I've been Cole Ross. You can see my tweets on Twitter at Cole Ross, KOLERoss.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me newly minted on Instagram at Deck of Wonders. And I've been putting up more and more art from the game there. So
neat.
For anyone that didn't or doesn't remember from previous, I'm working on a card game called Deck of Wonders. It's like a solitaire version of Hearthstone with some legacy mechanics thrown in for fun. And yeah, I've been getting art in that is very exciting. So sharing that on Instagram at Deck of Wonders.
Nice.
I'm David Mysmith, and you can find me as long as you stay at least 6 feet away.
I mean, taken as read. and Ben.
I've been Ben Merkel at Merkelby on Twitch. I like it better if you tell us all to sign off individually.
Oh, sorry, no. I just wanted to move things along. And stick around for some titles. Greta, why are you on my desk? This is not the time. There is an appointed time. There's an appointed time in the afternoon for you to be on my desk.
Chaos. It's nice that you think that cats follow rules.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Who has titles?
Got some titles here.
Okay.
All right. One from very early on, Existential Overhead.
Okay.
One from probably not in the episode, but you are not a book.
Oh yeah, when she was on my bookshelf,
Greta was wanting to be a strategy guide. And then finally, Katana Controller.
Okay,
a nice little bounce to it.
Yeah, Katana Controller. Who else has one?
I have one. I have Irrelevant Sentence. Just like the sound.
What was that from?
Context was talking about XCOM and talking about Death Sentence or an Irrelevant Sentence.
Gotcha, yeah. Okay. David, how about you?
So I had a single one. It was one button, colon, kill.
Okay. I have one. This was a Dennis line. It's one word, thingus. nothing got multiple votes.
Yeah,
it's a weird auteur week this week.
we had two on the theme of the Katana Controller.
Yes.
One Katana Controller and one button kill.
Yeah. One button kill. I like one button colon kill better than just Katana Controller.
I think I'm down with that.
Yeah. How does everybody feel about that? One button kill?
I have no strong opinions.
Okay. Yeah, let's go with that.
Sweet.
All right. Cool. Well, I'm going to go attend to my needy kitty cat.
Yeah.
All right, guys.
See y'all.
See ya. Stay safe. Stay sane.
Yeah. Take care.
Likewise.